The Klunenfow is a public affairs presentation of 94.1, 620 KHB, 97.5, 770 KFB, 810 WEDO, and 103 KVE.
The Klunenfow. With Eric O'Brien at the engineer's desk, I'm Pat Klunen, opening the book on matters of interest in Pittsburgh's southeastern suburbs. This week, as we move into a second year of the Klunenfow, we focus again on Harrisburg with my guest, State Senator James R. Brewster, Democrat from McKeesport, representing the 45th Senatorial District, covering 38 municipalities in portions of Allegheny and Westmoreland counties, from McKeesport to Kane and Clareton to the Allakiskey Valley. And, Senator, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pat. Nice to be here.
And it's a pleasure to have you as well. Last month, Senator Brewster was sworn in for a second full term in the state Senate, having been chosen by the voters in a special election in 2010 and then in regular elections in 2012 and 2016. He was reappointed Democratic chair of the Senate Law and Justice Committee and Game and Fisheries Committee. He also serves on the Appropriations, Banking and Insurance, Education, Local Government, Transportation and Policy Committees. And Jim, tell us a little bit about those roles, if you would.
Well, Pat, actually, they're very important, and one of the things I'm very proud of as we complete my sixth year in office here, these committees are very important because legislation starts in the committees. And just to give you an example, well, I mean, if you look at what I'm on, I'm banking insurance, 30 years, almost three decades in the banking business, education, as you know, I've been fighting hard for public education, local government, as you know, former mayor, transportation I've been on, just did Act 89. The legislative budget and finance is an excellent one to be on because it really deals with special resolutions to do audits on specific issues. For example, I have an audit now through the committee as the vice chair to study the financial impact that charter schools have on public schools. On justice, for your listeners, we were just able to do liquor modernization, which, as you know, was very contentious. A great deal of study went into that. And today we have a process where customers have more convenience, better pricing, better variety. And we didn't lose 4,000 jobs in the state stores. We proved that we could do all of these things at one time. As you know, there was an effort to privatize, which I was opposed to. Because it did not give the customer base, our constituents, what they really wanted. And it cost 4,000 jobs, roughly. So that's a success story. And by the way, it was bipartisan. And I give all those involved in the House and the Senate that were involved. It was a major, it was landmark legislation. Frankly, it opened up our liquor laws so that the LCB can go out and do competitive pricing, so that beer distributors can sell mixed cases. Package reform gave them the ability to sell a can of beer, direct shipment of wine, for example. So being on these committees, that's where this legislation starts. That's where the real debates occur. That's where the data is studied. So being named to eight different committees, frankly, I think is unprecedented. I'm very fortunate to be on eight committees. I don't think there are many senators that are. And I'm chairman of three, which also is not typical of what happens. And I like to think my experience in education and local government and banking is some of the reasons why I'm given that opportunity. So it's very important. The average person wouldn't know the process, and I can understand that. But anything they read in the newspapers or here on television or radio really is a byproduct of these committees.
As we record this edition, the state of Pennsylvania is beginning to digest Governor Tom Wolf's proposals for a state budget in fiscal 2017-2018. And late on Tuesday afternoon, you issued a statement regarding what you call a blueprint for change because of the governor proposing a cut of more than $2 billion in expenses and so forth. Tell me a little bit about your observations about the budget as proposed by Governor Wolf.
Well, I think the most important thing for your listeners, Pat, is the fact that there are no broad-based tax increases being proposed. And that, I believe, will get bipartisan support. You know, and I have to say this, we're approaching election time. in the gubernatorial race. So that always complicates the process. I think the average constituent knows that. So we're not sure what to expect. But we know that in the last year, tax increases were proposed. Of course, they weren't implemented. But this year, he's proposed about a $2 billion, $2.1 billion reduction in expenses. And he's going to do that by combining some different departments and trying to fix a $3 billion structural deficit. Again, I don't want to, I'm trying not to divert any attention to the previous administration, but Governor Wolf inherited a structural deficit. It's there. We can't deny it's there. And he tried to fuel that deficit with additional taxes last year. And frankly, I'm just as happy that didn't happen because I'm not a tax Democrat. As you know firsthand, my experience 10 years on council, McKeesport, and 7 years as mayor, I don't believe I ever raised a tax, property taxes at all. So I think this year's approach is much better. It's going to be something that the taxpayers are more interested in hearing about. And so we're fine-tuning government, something that everybody clamors for. Now, it's not an easy task. And I want to just caution folks to understand that, you know, my position has always been to try and cut without having people lose jobs. You know, one of the things we found in the previous administration when they cut education, whether you're a pro-public education a supporter or not, the fact of the matter is when we cut education almost $1 billion, 25,000 people were unemployed. And at the time, I think we had about 500,000 on the unemployment ranks. So, you know, it's easy to say privatize liquor, cut education. But if we're going to do things that sound good, but the end result is that you have reduced services and people lose their jobs, you haven't really done a very good job of being good stewards of the taxpayer dollars. But having said that, he has a plan to merge some departments, and there's about $1 billion new revenue in there, the biggest number being the 6.5% Marcellus Shale proposal, which would generate probably $260-270 million. And as you know, Pat, that's sort of a byproduct of my bill. And I've always been a proponent when you have a new industry, without crippling that industry, if we get that new industry to employ people and pay a reasonable tax, it will help defer tax and mitigate tax increases to the middle class, who generally ends up having to be the ones that pay the bill. So we had new opportunities. We've seen it with the casinos. So as we get casinos, as we get Marcellus Shale and that sort of thing, we should use that new revenue to offset some of this deficit. So I'm excited about his budget this year. It was I don't think it's contentious at all. There's going to be some debate maybe on the Marcellus Shale, for example. And again, production's down, but we certainly don't want to hurt the industry. It's good for Pennsylvania, providing we do all of our environmental work to make sure that we keep people safe. It's going to create additional jobs and hopefully offset some of our dependency on foreign oil.
Indeed. Senator Jim Brewster from McKeesport, my guest on this edition of the Clunan File. As you mentioned, for the past several years, have pressed what you term a responsible energy extraction tax on Marcellus Shale drillers with an eye to using the revenue to fund education. Now, where is the governor planning to put the money if, in fact, a Marcellus Shale extraction tax is passed? Where would it go?
Well, the level of detail, I don't, you know, at this point in time, it's probably not there yet. He probably has in his head where he wants it to go. He didn't share that in today's budget presentation. But if I recall, and I'm not saying this is where it'll go this year, but if you recall, some of the revenue from, for example, his proposal when we talked about modernizing liquor was to have some of that money go towards the pension deficit. He could put it in that direction because we know our pension issue has to be taken care of, and it's about a $55 billion problem. But the fact of the matter is, education is going to get another $200 million. I'm sure some of it will go towards that. I don't have that detail, Pat, but the important thing is to note is that a new industry will help fill some of these gaps that we will not have to go to the average taxpayer and get money from. I think that's the message I want to get out there. I'm not so sure the general public needs to know or wants to know, but we can get that detail for you maybe in our next edition.
Well, that'd be just fine. I'd appreciate that. Let me venture off of the budget for a moment here. You have, as I said, you've been extremely involved in a lot of things in Harrisburg. Your requirement of domestic steel and hydraulic fracking pipelines and safety equipment, you also pressed a resolution in the last session with support from many of your colleagues in this part of the state that called for strong enforcement of trade laws to protect the domestic steel industry from the dumping of foreign-made steel. In recent weeks, we've also had the announcement from Durabond of the purchase of the U.S. Steel McKeesport tubular operations. And I'm wondering, does one affect the other? I mean, what kind of impact might there be from that purchase, which, of course, brings the pipe mill back into operation in McKeesport?
Well, Pat, there's no question that it's never as simple as it looks. And what we have found, the world economy is so complex right now that we have certain dependencies on other countries. And I know the president's addressing this issue. He has his version of how he wants us to look. Frankly, there are some things in his trade bill that I think big business will probably be will embrace. My bill specifically, and again, I'll harken back to the comment about Marcellus Shale, because I'm going to be very clear with the public. I support it 100%. I know they're working hard on the environmental issues and the royalty issues, but I found out just actually by accident that there were about 16 different countries supplying steel to the companies that were doing Marcellus drilling in Pennsylvania. There was one that was using all domestic steel, and it struck me as being odd. Now, when you look at the smaller drillers, you'll see that they don't have the financial wherewithal to maintain inventories like some of the bigger groups can. So you have to understand that. And their margin of profit, the profit margin, is narrower. So we want to make sure as we go through this transition and change regulations, which we need to do to get steel production back in our country and not have to rely on foreign countries, is going to be a slow process, but it can be done on the federal level and the state level. And my particular bill required, and I'll say this for any of those that are concerned about the environment, it was to make sure that domestic steel was used for the first 300 feet in the drilling, because that goes through our water table. If those pipes would burst or crack, as you know, they were encased in concrete, that's where you can get your water damage. Once you get below 300 feet, then you don't have that issue. The transmission lines, when you transmit what you extract from the ground, some of those transmission lines are on the surface or above the surface. They need to be safe for the public. And I think domestic steel should be used. Now, why would I say that? Well, because it's more regulated. Now, regulation sounds bad sometimes, but we know that the steel that's made in this country meets the regulations that we think are safe for the public. When you get foreign steel in, that's not always the case. Not saying it doesn't happen in some cases, but it's not to the degree that I think it should be. The third aspect of my bills was to have a database where every driller, every company that worked within the state would document with the EP exactly where they got their steel from, so that the average person sitting at home could get on the internet, hit that website, and see if they have drillers in their area where they were buying steel from. Now, that process is in place, it just wasn't updated. So that wasn't new news, but it was basically getting the DEP and the drillers to cooperate and make sure that the data was real time. So those are good deals. For those that are worried about safety, that was my number one issue. Secondly, we want to buy from America where we can. And now getting to that point, it's gotten very complex in the last three decades. And when you do these transitions, like anything else, you just can't turn the switch and make it go away. You have to consider all the ramifications and what harm you may do to some of these companies, and we want to be cognizant of that.
Let me go back to something that you issued late on Tuesday. I'm going to quote this. Job creation, health care, property tax relief, and education are priorities. It will be critical that we identify how the proposed spending plan deals with these issues during the 3 weeks of upcoming budget hearings before the Senate Appropriations Committee. What exactly will go into those hearings, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, there'll be clarification on the budget. We'll get Secretary of Revenue and other secretaries and cabinet members will come in and talk about, for example, the four agencies that are identified by the governor to be combined. Those folks that run those agencies will come in and explain how that's going to be done, what the pros and cons will be. Specifically, you're talking about agencies like health, aging, drug and alcohol, human services, those operations we streamline. So we need to hear from them what will be changed from how it looks today to what it will look like 6 months from now, and what will be the potential collateral damage, if any. We're hoping none, and that explanation is important to the public, because in every one of those agencies I just mentioned, we have thousands of people in the state that are relied on those particular agencies. So it's important, number one, that the service doesn't get cut. And I'm sure the governor wouldn't be doing this if he thought that was going to happen. And then secondly, what's the financial result of this effort? And that's important to the taxpayers as well, because we're trying to show them that we're streamlining government so we don't have to raise taxes. And, I'll just put a plug in for some of us conservative Democrats. Not everybody's a tax-spending Democrat. That's a myth. That's another myth that needs to be replaced. So I'll just throw that in there as sort of an editorial comment. So when he makes these changes, those are the kinds of things that will come into the committees. And then you're going to see some bills. You're going to see some amendments. You're going to see some recommendations, and I hope bipartisan. I mean, the plan here is that if we start at baseline, that we'll get Republican support on maybe initiatives that we haven't thought of, that they can recommend that will be consistent with the governor's message. And at the end of the day, you get bipartisan support, gets through the Senate and the House, the governor signs it, and we're a better state for that. So that's kind of where I think the starting point this year is as good as it's been in the past 6 years that I've been here. You never want to start off a budget year by criticizing the governor's message, whether it be Governor Corbett, Governor Wolf. You want to, and some of us have done that. I mean, I was very undone by the cuts to education. Our initiatives are to hold the line on taxes, create jobs, okay, and provide tremendous education. And there's going to be tremendous discussion about education. I'm so happy to get on the committee because I've been working hard to get on it. And I have a complete charter school reform bill that the public needs to understand and embrace. And this isn't an anti-charter school. Look, we can have private schools, Catholic schools, charter schools, and public schools. They should not be in competition by any means. Because when you hear competition in education, because it's commingled with the state, I mean, the Constitution's clear. We're obligated by law to fund public education. And that means public tax dollars. So for anybody that thinks that choice is good, competition in education, I'm not sure is good. Because when you take students off the top, who maybe have the wherewithal to go somewhere else, we end up with areas with huge poverty, schools that cannot afford to stay open. So this idea that everybody has a choice is a myth. Not everybody has a choice for various reasons. But education is going to be a big discussion in 2017. And I'm hoping that in these meetings that you make reference to, that my charter school reform bills and any other legislator that has a reform package to address this issue. And not to get into too much detail now, Pat, because I think this is another topic that could take a whole session.
Yes, it could.
When you look at charter schools right now, and again, I'm not criticizing them. I'm just simply creating the facts available. I want to create a partnership. I don't want to eliminate them. That when a charter school comes into a school district and they go to the local school board and said, if we want to open up here, that school board, who, by the way, is elected by the public, and that's the key. When you talk about education, public schools are the only entity that provides education. that has a school board elected by the taxpayers. That's significant. We cannot ignore that group. And I think there are folks in Harrisburg that want to ignore the elected body.
You certainly have.
We have got 19 school districts in my senatorial district, Pat. Some are doing very well and some are struggling, not because of poor management, but because of the downturn in the economy.
You certainly have a ringside seat to in your hometown. The fact that McKeesport is a rarity in the greater Pittsburgh area. I mean, how many communities that small have two charter schools? A Propel operation up by the Corpus Christi Church and Young Scholars in downtown McKeesport. How have those charter schools impacted the McKeesport Area School District, and how does anything that you are proposing or maybe in the works in Harrisburg would affect that equilibrium, so to speak?
Well, that's, again, it's almost like the trade issue with steel. It's complex now because it has gotten out of control. I've often referred to the charter schools as being unbridled. We've had a number of public hearings on this. And I will just say this, Propel does a wonderful job. I've said that when I was mayor. The issue becomes to the taxpayers is if you're paying school taxes in the McKeesport School District and you have your public school system and now you have a Propel charter school and we have some excellent Catholic schools as well. So the issue becomes how much can the public afford to pay? Because when the charter schools come in, and this happened with Young Scholars, they went to the school board. That board, elected by the taxpayers, said, look, we can't support another charter school. It was not a negative about Young Scholars. It was just a question, what would happen if between those two charter schools, they would take 500 of McKeesport school districts, their school enrollment? Just 500. And the simple math, at $10,000 per student. The average citizen doesn't realize that these school districts have to write a check for roughly $10,500 for every student that goes to the charter school. The number may vary a little bit, right off the top of their budget. The superintendents of McKeesport may not know until school starts how many students they've lost to the charter school. They will not know. The charter schools aren't obligated to give them advance notice. I have one school district that has to pay, if you can believe this, they're required by law, which is what I'm trying to change, to pay for busing for charter school students. And that school district doesn't even bus their own students. Now imagine if the taxpayers in that community knew that you're supporting your local public school, they do not bus their students because they walk, they're close enough to walk, but you're paying your tax dollars to pay for X number of students to go to a charter school. That seems to be unfair to the taxpayers. And for the folks that want to, you know, the rhetoric you hear in Harrisburg, particularly from the other side of the aisle, is we always want to protect the taxpayers. Well, you're not doing it when it comes to education. And that's just a fact. That's not a wish or a thought. It's a fact. And if there's 5,000 financial disputes in the Department of Education between charter schools and public schools, reimbursement, one end saying, you didn't give us enough money, we took 30 students, you gave us enough money for 20, it goes back to 5,000 disputes. They can't even handle them. Now, having said that, my charter school bill will create a partnership, and I think the most important thing is predictability. If any school district knows that they might lose 50 students, they can do their budget. That's important. They don't get stuck having to raise the millions to the taxpayer, because if they find out at the last minute, Pat, how do they pay? I mean, they've got to pay the electric bill, gas bill, building maintenance, both anything that goes with a school. When you lose 100 students, you didn't lose a building. It's still sitting there. And the taxpayers are left to deal with that. So it's that predictability that bothers me. And frankly, there should be a cap. Folks on the other side of the aisle don't want to talk about caps. If you want to be a charter school, you should be a partner with that school district and say, look, what percentage of your budget, for example, Woodland Hills, the last number I saw, about $11 million off the top of their budget goes to charter school. Imagine, $11 million, and it's probably more now. And I think their budget might be $70 million. Imagine $11 million of taxpayer dollars going to a charter school that has no school board, The minute that check leaves that school district, it goes to an entity with no oversight for the taxpayers. None. That's wrong.
Senator, let's bring things to a slightly different topic as we're coming down to the closing minutes of the program.
Yep.
Constituent service is something else. I mean, you stress constituent service. You have three local district offices. You've also recently have sent out information about the annual, I think it's the tax
and rebates.
The tax and property rent rebate, yes. Tell me a little bit about that, would you?
Well, we do this every year, and this is the kind of constituent service that I'm most proud of. I have a great staff, Pat, and most of the other offices do as well. But every year we do what we call property tax rebates and rent rebates. And basically, it's seniors are eligible, widowers age 50 and older, and individuals that have disabilities that are 18 years of age or older. And basically, there's a criteria. We average probably about 1,200 a year, which is a lot. I think the maximum they can get back is about $650. And I think if it could be less, if you could make $35,000 and still get money back. Renters with incomes below $15,000 qualify for assistance. There's a formula that they use. It's not real complicated. But the important thing is that people can go into our offices. And this is why I started these satellite offices. I have 38 communities. So I have a staff member that's been in every one of those communities. We rotate them so that folks don't have to worry about driving a car, catching a bus, so they can walk in. These are the hidden things that a lot of folks don't know that we do, particularly in the Senate, where folks can walk in and are seniors. They come in, maybe they'll come in a small bus, six or seven or eight, and sit down and go through their rent or tax rebate in our offices. And frankly, we actually send staff out to some of the senior centers to help. So again, it's constituent service that you can't put a price tag on it. I mean, these are folks that have paid taxes in their lifetime and are retired now, maybe lost their spouse. And really, it's time for us to give them a little bit of help. And it's just guidance. It's not a lengthy process, but it's complicated if you're sitting at home by yourself with no help. So we're pretty proud of that. We do that every year.
And we should mention that the senator has, in addition to sending a staffer to the various municipalities, there are three regular offices in Monroeville, one Monroeville Center on Northern Pike. That the phone number there is 412-380-2242. That's 412-380-2242. In McKeesport, it's 201 Lau Boulevard. It's Old City Hall. And the phone number is 412-664-5200. That's 412-664-5200. And up in the Kiske Valley, you have New Kensington City Hall. That's 301 11th Street in New Kensington, 724-334-1143. That's 724-334-1143. Jim, we are just about out of time. Anything you want to say to wrap up things, maybe in 20 seconds or so?
Well, no, I just think it's important that the listeners understand that I think this is a good start this year. I'm optimistic. We're going to have some disagreements, but in regards to their party affiliation, everyone's working on their behalf. I'm very proud of the folks in the Senate, regardless of what side of the aisle they sit on. And I really believe in their hearts and minds, they want to do what's right for the people that's out there. I believe that. We just have a difference of agreements on some things that are very controversial at times. But don't lose hope. You live in a great state and a great country, and we want to make sure that we do the best on their behalf.
Amen to that. State Senator James R. Brewster, or Jim Brewster, if you like, a Democrat from McKeesport and the 45th District. My thanks to Senator Brewster for being on our program. Our purpose is to focus on issues in the Monongah area in Allegheny County, the Norwin, Jeanette, Hempfield, Mount Pleasant, and Franklin regional areas in Westmoreland County, and elsewhere in Pittsburgh's southeastern suburbs. You may contact me by snail mail at 1918 Lincoln Highway, North Versailles, 15137, or by email at pclunan55@gmail.com. With thanks again to Eric O'Brien for his assistance, I'm Pat Clunan. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to The Clunan File. a public affairs presentation of 94.1 620 KHB, 97.5 770 KFB, 810 WEDO, and 103 KVE.